Well, that was you. I pushed the button at the same time. All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Committee of the Whole meeting for Thursday, January 30th, 2020. Ms. Hoffman, can you call the roll, please?
Mayor Dewey.
Here.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Here.
Councilmember Devlin.
Here.
Councilmember Vick.
Here.
And Councilmember Michelson.
Here. Great, thank you. We're here for two items tonight, discussion only, Resolution 456, amending the Personnel Policy Manual, and Resolution 387C, which amends the Town Council Rules. Following that discussion, we'll allow for public comment and adjourn. When we set this meeting, we set the goal of adjourning by 7 o'clock for obligations from council members after this, and so with that, obviously allowing for a little bit of time for public comment. We can do this a couple of ways. We can, whichever item you feel we need to devote more time to, we can agendize it that way. We can split it 50-50 and allow approximately 25 minutes for each item. Does council have an inclination, just so I know how to budget our time? Or do we care? All right. We'll just get right into the Personnel Policy Manual, and if we go over 25 minutes, then we'll try to shift over to the Town Council Rules. So with the Personnel Policy Manual, you've been provided a copy of that manual. The changes in the manual are driven in two separate ways. Firstly, initially, the changes were driven based on policy review by outside parties who suggested that bullying and harassment clauses be updated. Previously, our bullying and harassment section defined bullying and harassment but didn't prohibit it, which it was suggested that it does indeed prohibit it. The spirit of the policy does so, but it wasn't outright stated. So that's one of the major drivers behind personnel policy revision. There's also some housekeeping that occurred throughout the policy to maintain consistency with Montana Code Annotated. And then there was some organization done as well, where sections were sometimes consolidated. And I don't have those highlighted right in front of me, but they were consolidated because they were a better fit in another section. For example, there may have been something under the telephone use policy that actually dealt with travel for work or something like that. And so we did some cleanup of the organization. The policy before January 12th and since, or excuse me, this policy before December 12th and since December 12th has gone before MMIA for review, which is the next prong of this process. MMIA not only likes to review our policies when they change or provide guidance when we suggest updates, but we're under review right now by MMIA for underwriting, which every so often we come up for renewal of our employment practices coverage. That happens to be now. And so we have a time frame in the first quarter to submit a revised policy to MMIA for their underwriting. So everything we do is obviously subject to their approval. So far, they like what we've sent them. When we originally sent the policy prior to December 12th, Ms. Simonson, who is the human resource specialist at MMIA, suggested some changes and some feedback. We have those charted out and addressed all of her concerns. And some of those didn't even have to do with the changes that were implemented in the policy. They were from the previous version of the policy that just got missed. And so since things have changed, she'd like those fixed as well. So we've addressed those. So with that, I'd open the floor up to the Town Council to further discussion of the policy so that we can incorporate whatever changes or questions you have and get that back over to the insurer. Mr. Michelson, excuse me.
I don't see much of a thing on my end as far as I can see as far as the personnel policy. Obviously, the mileage, of course, has to be changed, correct?
We'll review that. You mean the mileage that For reimbursement?
Well, I'm looking at your resolution here that you want to...
Right. Yeah, it's some places in the policy it gave a fixed amount, and in other places it was very generic and said refer to document A for this rate. We like to, instead of putting actual rates in policy, because policies don't necessarily change every year, but, for example, IRS mileage does.
You do just that up.
So what we did was kept it generic to say refer to the most current IRS mileage rate for mileage reimbursement.
Okay.
So instead of changing the policy on the 1st of July every year, you refer to that document so that this policy...
change the language so it reflects, so you don't have to go back and
right.
Know. Gotcha.
And we did the same thing with per diem as well.
Gotcha.
Per diem was updated so that it reflects back to the state per diem allowances. So as the state per diem allowances change, the town of Stevensville's do.
Okay.
Without having to readopt a new policy.
Okay. And as far as where the revisions have been recommended by independent third-party consultant and town's attorney to address workplace bullying and harassment prevention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that came from Malin?
In part Malin and in part MMIA.
Okay. And where specifically did she point to, may I ask, that she thought we should change? Because it's kind of a broad brush.
Sure. So if you go to page, let's start on page 15 of the packet. So we're on the gray box of 15, which would be 5 of the policy itself. The new language in here was rearranged so that harassment was explicitly defined, and then harassment prevention and reporting was addressed, and then we defined workplace bullying, which used to be lumped into harassment. So section E was pulled out of the harassment section and designated its own, and then section F talks about how workplace bullying is prevented and how it's reported. One of the big changes in the policy throughout was anywhere we gave a specific timeline to when training would occur. So, for example, if the policy said that employees and members of the organization must receive annual training, MMIA felt that was too strict, where you should say regular training or frequent training, so that if for some reason... if you hold your annual training on January 9th, and then the next year you don't hold it until the 13th or 14th, then you have a few days there where an employee or could cause problems for the town by saying, well, you didn't do your annual training, and that's why I got harassed. And so they said regular training or frequent training. So those words were incorporated throughout the policy at their advice.
Okay, on section 6, I have a question about that.
Lawsuits against the town?
Correct.
Okay, what's your question?
That part, when an employee is approached by a legal process server, they should refer to the server to the mayor or their designee or to legal counsel. Should an authority not be available, an employee is required to accept served papers and employed to locate and forward information to either the authorities listed without opening or reading the documents. Shouldn't language be if you're served papers that has something to do with the town? If you're on a job and somebody serves you papers that have nothing to do with the town, car accident or whatever, you're subpoenaed to go to something that's not related to this, then to me this is kind of conflicting, because here it says you served any papers, then you're supposed to take it to you.
Or, sure.
See what I'm saying here?
Yeah, we could clarify some of that language. The intent is obviously that if the process server is there to serve the town of Stevensville.
Because here the way the language is, it's served any paper.
Sure.
And to me, that's a personal thing. You shouldn't be bringing it to you if I'm served for something that has nothing to do with the town.
Sure.
That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
We can clarify that.
Do you have more, Bob?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Page 16 of the packet on under workplace bullying. And this could be because of a change due to NMIA's suggestion or something like that. I don't think bullying should be only including health harming mistreatment. It should be any type of mistreatment, repeated mistreatment. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And then that's the only thing I had there, and put on page 23 of the packet under 11, outside employment. I don't think we should require our part-time employees, with the exception of obviously our police officers, things like that, but I don't think we should require our part-time employees to make the town of Stevensville their primary job, because if they have a full-time job somewhere else, it's where could be preventing them from
right
from earning money. Right.
You could put an hour limit or something in there.
I think what the intent, and it's not necessarily to disagree, Dempsey, I think the intent of that is to protect the town from if their main source of income is elsewhere and that interferes with their work performance,
right?
Then this helps us address that.
Okay,
that's the intent. Now, if council wants to take direction one way or another on that clause, they can. But I think the intent is to say, if you're working someplace else for the town of Stevensville, the expectation is that your work product or your productivity for the town of Stevensville doesn't diminish.
Right. That makes sense, too, because, I mean, we don't want to have an employee that's going to constantly call in either because they're working somewhere else. So.
Right. If they have a full-time job elsewhere and they're doing a part-time position with the town of Stevensville, this helps us avoid issues where maybe they're repeatedly calling in schedule changes, or they're constantly unavailable to work. And we could use a lifeguard as a good example. You know, if they're consistently unable to fill shifts for us, but the expectation when they were brought on was that they would work so many hours a week, and they're not doing that.
Right.
This allows us to address that.
Okay.
Right above that, Mayor Dewey, mm-hmm. I have a question.
Okay.
It's on Section 9, smoking and tobacco use. Employees may smoke during scheduled break and meal periods. Smoking and tobacco use are not permitted in areas outside the building. In an area which would not cause offense to any other person, if in doubt, ask your co-workers or people within the area. You think maybe we should put a distance in there? Because a lot of places I know they have distances mm-hmm. or marked off. Mm-hmm. This is very, very vague.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think the law says 100 feet, if I remember correctly, 100 feet outside of a public building. It's either 100 or 25 feet.
And right below that, smoking within a presumably reasonable distance. I think we should put a distance in there because that makes it so vague. A reasonable would be to hear at the park.
Anybody's reasonable is different.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When this was drafted, there was conversation amongst council about a tobacco-free campus policy for employees. Is the council interested in reconsidering that at the time? This is an abbreviated version of that, but at one time we discussed becoming completely tobacco-free on city grounds as far as employees are concerned.
So we can make it tobacco-free.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So that if you are on town property and an employee, you don't use tobacco products, period.
So they'd have to do similar to like they do down at the hospital, where if they want to smoke, they have to go off campus.
Correct.
I'll be okay with that.
Yeah,
so
I think we should
eliminate completely, check this language and say it's prohibited?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We would just have to write it out to where it says
on town
Stevensville property.
We have language from the last time council considered that policy. We have language. We from the Clean Indoor Air Act folks that we can easily insert in there, if that's mm-hmm. something you're willing to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds good.
What other sections are we looking at tonight? You're fine.
Oh, on number 13.
Okay.
Personnel files.
Sure.
The first dot area down there, personnel files are confidential and only accessible to the mayor, human resource representative, or supervisors on a need-to-know basis. So my question would be, who are the other supervisors? Because I was always under the impression it was just the mayor and the HR officer were the only ones that would be privy to the personnel files.
So when the reference there, it, supervisors is in terms of a specific file. So for example, I mean, the pool manager can access a lifeguard's personnel file, but could not access the town clerk's personnel file. And that's regulated through Robert.
Chain of command.
Or through the Human Resources Department. So, yes, supervisors do have access to their employees' files, per the policy, but it's not carte blanche where we just give every supervisor a key to the cabinet. They have to access those files through the human resources representative, and a log is kept as to when those policies are accessed or those files are accessed. Mm-hmm. So that if something was placed in a file and an employee didn't agree with it or didn't have any knowledge of that remark in their file, we could go back and find out when it was placed. And who did it?
And then I have a question on number 16, work okay. schedule and breaks. If the mayor, supervisor, and their designee and the employee agree, the non-exempt employee can elect to accumulate compensatory time, comp time, for the use as time off at a future date at a rate of 1.5 times. Isn't that one for one, or is it one for one and a half?
It's they earn it at 1.5. They get paid hour for hour.
Okay.
It's the opposite of overtime. Whereas overtime, you get paid 1.5, right?
Mm-hmm.
Comp time, you earn the hours at 1.5. The hours go into a bank, and then when you use those hours, you're paid at your regular rate.
Gotcha. And when you take time off, is it time and a half for time and a half, or comp time and a half for one?
How do you mean that? Do you have an example? So if an employee takes off, uses their comp time, is that what you're saying?
Correct.
So if they're here and they say, "Well, I have comp time to use, and so I'm not, you know, I'm going to take."
Let's say they're here for 3 hours tonight,
and I'm not going to take Friday. So they say, "I'm going to take Friday off, and I'm going to use my comp time to do that." Then what we do is we pay them for 8 hours of comp time at their regular rate.
Gotcha. Okay.
Let's say they were here, let's see, 1.5 times.
So say they came to a council meeting and had taken no other time off during the week. For example, if we earned comp time based on tonight's meeting, and comp time's only earned once they work 40 hours.
Right.
So they don't technically earn comp time on a Monday evening or a Tuesday evening. Comp time's always earned Friday afternoon. We get the alerts at noon usually that say so-and-so's hit their 40 hours, send them home, or they're going to earn comp time
right.
or overtime.
I just wanted, my question was just clarification. So for like 1 hour would be
correct.
one and a half hours of comp time.
Exactly. Okay. If they're in a council meeting for an hour, they're going to get an hour and a half of
okay.
credit in their comp balance.
Okay.
Yep. The exception to that is holidays. So we strongly discourage working on a holiday. Sometimes it's not avoidable, especially in terms like the sewer plant. The water plant, we have to check that every day, 365 days. And so if an employee comes in on a holiday, we'll give them an opportunity elsewhere in the week to take that time off if they worked on a holiday. If that's not possible for whatever reason, then they earn their holiday pay, and then their overtime rate. So if they worked an 8-hour day on a holiday, they're going to receive 8 hours of holiday pay, and then they're going to receive 8 hours of overtime.
Okay.
Ms. Holcomb.
I'm not even sure which number it is, but I believe it's with the grievance and the complaints about where it stops with the mayor. And I think I had an issue with this when we were talking about this before. I think we need to figure out who we would go to if the mayor can't make a biased decision. Is that the word I want to use? Mm-hmm. Because but I've seen sometimes where the mayor and a council person, or if that was the person the employee had a complaint against, I've seen it where they have locked heads. And mm-hmm. I don't know if, would you be able to, would you or any mayor be able to say, okay, I'm going to be open-minded sure. and be able to do this without, well, I don't know. This person has been a pain in my you-know-what.
And that's part of the job. So page 45 is where we're at in terms of the grievance. So the grievance policy has been overhauled to be a bit more clear. So at MMIA's advice, there are three steps to this policy. Step one is if it's a department head that there's an issue with, or the department head would get the notification first if there's an internal grievance between two employees. If the grievance is against the department head, that goes to Human Resources and then is addressed through me or the mayor. And then if the grievance is against the mayor, it's also filed with HR, where that review is done with that office. Mm-hmm. So HR does that review. And if the employee is satisfied with that, then we're done. If they're not satisfied with that, there's really no other option. That's part of the nature of working higher up the ladder, so to speak, sure. where the closer you are to the mayor's office, the right you have for appeal diminishes naturally. Whereas if you have people between you and the mayor, your right for appeal increases. And so that's how it's written. And it does clarify in here because there have been, questions circulating about who can file a grievance on who and those types of things. A grievance isn't filed against the council person. Cause a grievance is grieving a policy decision of a supervisor or of another employee, right, of how someone was treated based on the policy. And council is not in the position to make those decisions. If they're making those decisions, it's out of their role. And so they wouldn't be covered by the policy.
Oh, I understand anyway. That.
So that's why we don't address, if a grievance comes on a council member or something like that. A complaint can be filed against a council member, but a grievance per se is not filed against a council member. And there is, in the original document that you were given back in December, there was the alternative dispute resolution that was included in there, which didn't. It basically said nothing in this policy precludes an employee or employer from agreeing to engage in alternate resolutions, whether that be mediation or conflict management or whatever that is. The MMIA asked that any costs involved with that dispute resolution they didn't want that language in there that we would split those costs. So we removed that language in there and said, if this is an option, but you're not bound to it.
Okay. I mean, now after the town, like say after step three or whatnot, and the person feels like, if the person feels like their complaint's still not being heard, don't they still have the right to go to the labor board?
Absolutely.
Okay, I think that needs to be put in here. I know it's up on the board back there, but it should be
in. It should be in the, yeah, absolutely.
Up on the board back where?
Their request is about restrooms where we have the required.
That was discussed at length with MMIA. They do have to exhaust this policy before they can go to the labor board.
Right.
But Angela discouraged us from including that in the policy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Did she say why?
Yes. We're not, we don't like to just offer up a potential lawsuit on a platter mm-hmm. without sounding shady.
Right.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. We don't want to give, you know, basically give that option to them unless they are aware of that. Now, and that's language that's will be incorporated. Every employee who is discharged has to receive a copy of the grievance policy because they have an amount of time after discharge of employment to file a grievance before they go into the labor board. It was an interesting perspective.
Mm-hmm. I think
I can ask for more clarification if you'd like me to, but I think we discussed that at length as to the pros and cons of having that language in there.
I apologize for almost interrupting you there. I think another way that it could be worded to where the person knows that they do have more steps if they need it. Just put in there, if the person does not feel like their grievance is being resolved, they can refer to the human resources manager.
The other thing that she mentioned in including that language to the labor board was that a grievance may be filed on something that's not necessarily illegal.
Right.
But the labor board would get involved in something that is illegal. And so by incorporating that, you're implying that any issue in the personnel policy is grievable to the labor board, which isn't
that
the case.
Sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else on the personnel policy before we move into council rules? Okay, we'll incorporate those changes and bring a cleaned up copy before council. Let's move over to the council rule changes. Get there. There we go. The council rule changes, what it sounds like is that council was interested in making more changes or extra changes in addition to or providing further feedback on the changes that the administration's recommending. And those changes are, the administration changes anyway, are largely operational to assist with clarification on, for example, the when the packets and agendas are published. There was an inconsistency in that language throughout the policy. In addition, we provided the option that the addition of an agenda item to the agenda could be delayed if it needed to be reviewed by the town's attorney, but that would be done in a timely manner so that legal review could be done of the agenda item prior to it being placed on the agenda, so that if and when it were placed on the agenda, it was fully vetted legally, so we were prepared, rather than having it after the fact. The other operational change was to the agenda, and that was to implement two pieces to the agenda, one being a consent agenda, which is used widely throughout other municipalities and even other board of directors that aren't involved in local government. That would help us expedite a few items on the agenda. And then allowing public hearings onto the agenda, which is a practice we've seen through some other cities as well, where rather than meeting at 6:30 for a public hearing, as we traditionally do, and then adjourning 2 minutes and 40 seconds later, as was the case last week, we can hold that public hearing during the meeting. It's agendized as a public hearing at the meeting, And then the agenda item can follow that public hearing on the business item of the or the business portion of the agenda. Obviously, highly attended or contentious or lengthy public hearings, we still have that option to hold a separate public hearing separate from a council meeting. But for those quick ones that we know are going to take 15 to 20 minutes or even less than that, as sometimes is the case, we'd just like to throw those on your council agenda, particularly on the last meeting of the month, because that's when we don't have administrative reports. And that just helps lessen the frequency of meetings and better use the time we have rather than adjourning at 6:35 and then hanging out for 25 minutes. So largely those are the changes in council rules. We attached the updated agenda item request as a sample for you. The agenda item request that's in the packet marked sample, that's an electronic form. So if that's filled out electronically and sent to us, we're able to load that form into our system, and the system pulls the information for us into the agenda rather than us having to type it in. So it helps the office a little bit. And then I gave you a sample agenda to kind of show how the consent agenda works and how a public hearing would look on the agenda as well. And I don't anticipate we'd have public hearings at every meeting, just like we don't have guests or correspondents at every meeting. But that's the rationale there. In addition, we moved public comment up to number 3 on the agenda and noted there, as other practice we've seen, where if it's not on the agenda, then that's where we'd seek public comment for items not on the agenda. But otherwise, if they have public comment on an item agenda, we're asking that they wait until that item occurs.
Well, we can always suspend council rules too, like we used to do in the...
Correct. Yeah, that option still exists within the rules to suspend those so that you can rearrange the agenda as you wish. In fact, I know of one organization where at the beginning of the meeting, after they call roll into the pledge, it's an agenda item to adopt the agenda, and basically council says, okay, we're okay with this, with how this is ordered, or change things then. I don't necessarily think we need to implement that, but that is an option if you'd like to, you know, see other agendas. But
now, one thing that I really liked from the other night when I went to another municipality for their council meeting, I really liked how the town clerk repeated back after each individual vote to make sure that each individual vote was recorded properly. I even though there's only 4 of us instead of 12 like at that other one, but I think it's a good option, because I know there's sometimes where in the minutes it's been recorded incorrectly by just simply because for whatever reason. So,
sure.
And I have a, and my thing is on this delay of addition of an agenda item by submitting it to the town's attorney. If we do something like that, I would like to see a time limit on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because otherwise it could, I mean, any mayor now or future could use that to indefinitely suspend an item on the agenda.
I think it should stay the same myself, because future mayors or any could use this as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
If it got toxic, they could say, you know, to start denying agenda items that the councilmen want. And that conflicts with right above it, where it says that 2 council members can override the mayor's decision.
Right.
Put a councilman on the agenda. And if we pass this here, that takes some of the power away from the council.
Right.
And these are our rules.
Right.
I don't want that to be changed at all. I think that in the past, we've always had where we went to a meeting, and I know what you're getting at, Brandon. The attorney would review it before it came to the council. But in the past, we've always had something where if it didn't fly to a council or we had questions, and then it would go to the attorney anyway.
Right.
And I just think that it's a tool that we could use still, but I just don't think we need this language in here, because, well, it just, I mean, it conflicts with the above.
Right.
I do think that part of the rationale behind inserting some of this language is in, we see a lot of places now implementing require legal review, which I think is excessive. I don't think that a required legal review is necessary for each of our agenda items. But I can see situations where agenda items would be submitted to the office with two council signatures on it that perhaps are misguided or overstep the council's legislative authority to even address. For example, if council brought in, not this council, but a council brings in a agenda item request with two council member signatures on it that says we want to direct the public works director to install a stop sign or fix a pothole at West 3rd Street. You're overstepping your legislative authority. You're not allowed to have that agenda item on there. And instead of the mayor being the bad guy and getting into a mess with the council, saying that's not the council's role. You don't get to direct the public works director to do anything. The intent here is to throw the attorney under the bus, so to speak, and allow him to explain where the executive and legislative powers in that situation would lie. So that's the rationale behind. Because when that type of thing happens, it can result in embarrassment to the council, and that's not what the organization wants. What I don't want is for us to come to this table, any governing body to come to this table because an agenda item was forced onto the agenda, to come to find out that the attorneys in the room saying you don't have any authority to make this decision or to even discuss this matter. This could be resolved through an email to the mayor, and then the council being embarrassed because now we've just done all this work and all this time for a meeting so that you could find out from the attorney you don't have any authority to make that decision. Which then results in articles in the paper, which often upset people. So that's some of the reasoning behind, and it's not set language. I'm certainly open to suggestions, but ultimately it's a safeguard to the organization, not just the mayor's office and not just the council, but it's a safeguard to the organization to prevent embarrassment, which is at length addressed. If you haven't yet read through the new updated municipal officials handbook, when they talk about agendas in there, that is discussed about. While the mayor isn't the gatekeeper of the agenda, so to speak, the council should be diligent about what items are being submitted. And I mean, it is somewhat of an ego killer when a council member comes in and says, "We don't necessarily care what you think. We're going to discuss this at the next council meeting." It's a much easier conversation to have when the council member comes in and says, I'd like to discuss this on the next agenda. How do we approach this subject? And one example of that is just recently a council member requested that we delve into job descriptions and pay salaries for an annual review. Well, to give us a chance to prepare for that, we had a conversation and agreed that the administration will update the organizational chart and link in those job descriptions so that it's easy to navigate and the council has a comprehensive picture as to what that looks like, rather than just coming to a meeting and saying, "Well, we need more information." So we're trying to incentivize better use of our time and a professional look on behalf of the organization. But again, I'm open to whatever language or if it
was. Which is why on this I think it'd be good to have a time limit on it, just so something doesn't sit into the ether indefinitely, so that we can at least have 2 weeks or 3 weeks to hear back from the attorney to say why or why not this is not a good idea. And then if we still feel like it needs to go on the agenda, then we can force it there, and then whatever.
I know what you're getting at, Brandon, and I agree with you. There's agenda items that could be in question. Like, I know what you're trying to get is a more concrete communication between the council and the mayor as far as agenda items. So, good example of what you just said, where I came in, we talked about the job descriptions and the reviews. You threw out an option. I said, no problem. Sure with it. delay it, whatever, to get time to put it together. I think that would work just as well or better communicating than it would be this year, because this year, in my eyes, we add this to the language, and I'm gone, he's gone, you're gone, he's gone. Some mayor or council could down the road get them down here, and this could be a problematic. I'm just saying it could happen.
Sure.
Where a mayor could say, you know what, I'm not putting it on in the council, and then you've got a rift over this. Right. See what I'm saying?
And I think that's why it's delegated back to the attorney, and that attorney, they do have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that, that everything's followed. And so if they'll do their review, I think that certainly they're not going to do their review forever.
No, and we don't need an attorney. And the two parties get together, and the mayor and the council. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Ms. Holcomb?
I see a way that we can fix this if we kept that in there, plus put a timeline in. If we put this above where it says any two council members may override the mayor's objection to adding of any agenda, because if he says, well, I want to delay this, two council members could come and say, no, we want this on, and then they can write it. So if you had this underneath where it says the mayor must approve all agenda items before they are added to the agenda, if you put this wording in between those two, I think that would eliminate what everybody's talking about, but put a time limit on. I agree, putting a time limit.
What kind of time limit suffices? 30 days? Remember, you have a part-time attorney.
Yeah.
And of course, every situation is different, too, with agenda items.
Absolutely.
There could be a rush on it.
I can't fathom an item that would need legal review that would need a rush.
2 weeks. A week, council meeting.
30 days usually gives it enough time that if it's 30 days, then what you've done is you've hit the next agenda, right? Mm-hmm. You've hit the next agenda deadline versus, because if you do, even if you did 2 weeks, which is reasonable, but 2 weeks, you're still going to miss the deadline for the next agenda anyway,
right?
Because the next agenda is going to be out a week after the council meeting.
Yeah, so we'd end up being into that next agenda anyway. So, I mean, I think 30 days would be a good time limit. Because then, regardless, regardless, because we can still force it to be on if it's
right.
Something
two
after
members,
that.
Two council members can still override the mayor.
Correct. Yeah. But I think if you rearrange
it. Yeah, if we rearrange it, it makes it to where it's more like an order rather
right.
than.
Right, if you rearrange those three,
okay.
then I think it works out.
I can live with that. And I don't have a problem, which it should have been changed from Stacey Bartlett, it's clerk. The agenda item, of course, being above that, on where it said Wednesday forever, and it should have been Thursday.
Right. So what the rule said was we have to have the agenda posted by Wednesday, but the packet posted by Thursday. And, of course, agenda items wouldn't be submitted till noon on Wednesday. And so this gives us an extra day to get, well, actually only a few hours to get everything compiled for the whole packet and agenda.
Can I guess, does that work for you?
To move it to Thursday?
Mm-hmm. Because I know we have gone back and forth where it was Wednesday, then it was Thursday, then it was Wednesday, then it was Thursday.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, about the middle of the week is probably the most busiest.
Okay.
You know. So I think Thursday is actually more helpful for the financial officer as well.
Okay. That
works
okay.
Yeah. Often what we find ourselves doing is
right.
we publish an agenda on Wednesday for the sake of publishing it, so because
yeah.
we want to be compliant with the rules, and then on Thursday we modify the claim numbers on the agenda when we publish the packet.
Okay. No.
So.
I want to ask Monica yeah. because, like I said, we've gone Wednesday, Thursday,
yeah.
back to Wednesday.
It'll save us a piece of paper every week.
Right. But I do have, are
sure.
we changing the meetings to Monday?
No. Is it say Monday in there?
It does.
Oops.
Yeah, it says regular Mondays
too.
Are second and fourth Monday.
Yeah, that should be
mm-hmm.
Thursday.
Yeah, it should be Thursday.
Okay.
You're correct.
We changed that when Chief Motley went
yeah.
Mondays for a while.
And I think it was just changed by a motion. I don't think we actually amended the rules. So, or we may have amended the rules and they didn't get updated in the computer. So we'll reflect
okay.
that.
Also, Brandon, on section 3, I think I touched bases with Scott on this, and I mentioned it to you at the last meeting, the conflict of interest, where it specifically states, but by the town attorney shall not participate in the debate, nor shall in the matter seek of influence of both the council, members of the council. I asked Scott about this, and he was, he thought that language should be added to meet that the mayor or executive officer and board members.
Okay.
Because it just says council on this.
So, if we're looking to, the presiding officer, regardless, is always covered in the rules, but if you're looking at applying something to board, to auxiliary boards, council rules isn't where that's going to live. Council rules only govern the council.
So we have to be in the personnel policy?
No, we can do a, like a board policy. We could do a resolution that stipulates or basically guides conflict of interests in boards and disseminate that to the boards.
But the presiding officer in here would be you.
Correct. Yeah, so but it's not always me. It could be you.
Could be me.
So that's why we don't explicitly say mayor. We say presiding officer.
Okay.
Because if I'm at the table, I'll always be the presiding officer.
Correct.
Right?
Right.
Same section. Censured needs to be spelled correctly.
Where? What page are we on?
64.
64.
Okay. It's C-E-N-S-U-R-E-D. Instead of S-O-R-E-D.
Okay.
And we should, and even though it does say that, we should also put a definition of what censorship is as well.
Okay.
So I think that would actually help everyone understand a little bit better what it is rather than just doing it.
Anything else? Are there other changes council desires or notes of clarification?
I know as of lately we've been kind of lax as far as allowing the public to address us when it says directly in here that all comments need to be directly towards you. Is that something that we want to remove where they can be towards anybody on the council or keep them where they have to be towards Brandon?
I think you just leave it in the council rules. If it were me, I'd leave them in the rules, and that presiding officer kind of has that ability to be flexible. And in certain meetings, it's not inappropriate for them to address council.
Right.
But very well attended high intensity meetings, we might ratchet down a little bit. And so having it in the rules, I mean there are rules, so.
Or it could be a very long meeting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. We also need to. And especially on those high intensity meetings, need to figure out a way to incorporate like a time limit and number of times a single individual can.
So the rules do allow for the presiding officer to, from time to time, limit public comment. And sometimes that's hard. I mean, I think maybe only one time ever implemented a public comment limit. So that's a hard call. It depends on the crowd and how lengthy people
right.
get. I think that certainly it's my intent this year to do a better job about limiting the public comment that happens to be a dialogue at the podium, which is a citizen gets up, comments, another citizen gets up, responds, the next same citizen prior gets up, responds to the second citizen's comments, and we have this dialogue from the podium that's actually taking place between two citizens and has very little bearing on what the town council is going to do. So that's something that I've been mindful of and will monitor. But certainly, I mean, if the town council wants to expedite their meeting or limit public comment, I just need to know that. Either you can make a motion at the beginning of the meeting that stipulates public comments limited to 3.5 minutes, or you can talk to me prior to the meeting and stipulate that or ask for that accommodation. I don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
So it's certainly your meeting. I'm just here to run it. Anything else? All right. Open the floor for public comment. Opportunity to comment on what we've discussed tonight or anything under the jurisdiction of the town of Stevensville. Please step to the podium, state your name and address for the record. All right. I hear no public comment. If there's nothing further from the council, we'll adjourn the council meeting.
Oh, I have one.
Oh, almost. So close.
I just forgot. I won't make it tomorrow. I have to run to Seattle in the morning.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll see.
I won't be back till Tuesday.
All right.
So you all know.
Appreciate the heads up. I do plan to do an update to council and kind of a release that overviews what was covered on Friday with staff. So we'll bring you back up to speed.
I still want to come in and watch whatever videos I need to watch.
Sure. And there won't be any video watching tomorrow. We're more or less working on the strategic goals for the organization. But as we proceed through the year, we'll make sure that those trainings and things occur for folks as well. So, alrighty?
Alright.
If there's anything else, I'll adjourn the meeting. Thanks, everyone.
No, I can't.